Falls puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Gordon Goldsboro joins us now with Abandoned Manitoba. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
What are we discussing this week?
Well, in this series, we have considered many types of abandonment, but I don't think we've ever talked about abandoned trees. You know, particularly the ones that line Winnipeg streets. So that's our topic this week, and we're going to visit a company called Urban Lumber that is giving these trees new life.
Okay, abandoned trees. I'm trying to envisage what this conversation is going to look like.
Yeah.
Struggling a little bit.
Well, you know, maybe it'll help to provide some background. Here in Winnipeg, people often admire our beautiful mature trees, you know, especially in the older areas of the city. Anyone who flies over Winnipeg in an aircraft can't help but think we live in a forest because many of the buildings are obscured by a dense tree canopy. Yet, if we look at early photos of Winnipeg, it's a very different picture. Essentially, it's a treeless prairie. Most of our city's public trees are the result of a conscious program of planting. You know, indeed, we can date the beginnings of the city's urban forest to 1884.
Why? What happened in 1884?
Well, that's the year when the Manitoba legislature gave Lieutenant Governor James Aikens the power to proclaim a new public holiday aimed at the planting of trees. It followed an idea that had originated in the U.S. in the mid-1870s, and the new holiday was to be known as Arbor Day. Tree experts would provide advice on what species would survive in Manitoba's climate, and parents were encouraged to involve their children in tree planting. Nurseries around Winnipeg offered a variety of saplings for sale, and Aikens gamely pitched in. He and his family planted trees around the grounds of the legislative building, which, by the way, at the time was a much smaller building on Kennedy Street than the one we know today. Arbor Day continued through the 1890s, but it didn't really catch on as a major holiday. Most people just use it as a vacation day rather than an opportunity to plant trees. And we don't know how many of the city's stately boulevard trees originate from these early planting efforts. What we do know is that most of the trees today were planted in the 1920s and 1930s.
Do we know how many trees there are in Winnipeg?
Well, I think so, at least approximately. There's a document that was published in 2021 by the City of Winnipeg, and it estimated the total number of trees at just over 3 million. And that represents about 17% of the city's area, which it said is substantially higher than any other Canadian prairie city. Green ash and American elm are two of the most common trees on public land, and they represent 26% and 33% respectively of the total count. Unfortunately, ash trees are targeted by an insect, the emerald ash borer, and elms can become infected by fungi that cause Dutch elm disease. City employees or sometimes contractors remove anywhere between 5,000 and 8,000 diseased trees each year.
And what happens to these trees?
In the past, they'd be simply ground up into chips and taken to a city landfill, where basically they contributed to the problem of waste disposal. These are what I consider to be truly abandoned trees. You know, it seems to me there should be a more productive use of these once majestic trees. Well, since 2018, wood chips are being taken to a city-owned landfill on Summit Road. That's over in the northwest corner of the city, and there they're combined with solids from wastewater treatment and sweepings from city streets to make a sort of soil material, and the city's hoping to use this material to remediate that abandoned landfill. However, there is another way to deal with these abandoned trees that reuses the wood. And in my opinion, this is a better option than chipping them for landfill.
So how are the trees reused?
Well, in 2021, Winnipegger Mike McGarry founded Urban Lumber. Each year, usually between August and April, Mike and his staff take delivery of between 1,500 and 2,000 trees that represent about 40% of the total number of removed trees. About 90% of those trees are elms, and they're mostly brought to the plant from city-owned properties, but occasionally from private yards, from golf courses and farms. And each 8 or 10 foot long tree trunk is entered into the company's inventory on arrival. They're piled for up to 2 weeks, sometimes longer, to air dry, and then they're cut into boards. Now, these boards go into a special vacuum kiln. It's one of the first of its kind in North America, and it controls temperature, humidity, and airflow to remove most of the water from the wood. And so after 1 week in that kiln, the wood slabs are now dimensionally stable. In other words, they won't warp. They're ready to be planed and sold, or sometimes some of those pieces are made in the company's workshop into furniture. And this is how I first became acquainted with Urban Lumber, when I had an opportunity recently to see two tables at Fort White Alive, one of which had a particularly interesting backstory.
I love a good backstory. Tell us about that.
Well, one of the tables had been made from an elm tree removed from the grounds of the legislative building. Now, who knows? It might have been one of the trees planted by Lieutenant Governor Akins at that very first Arbor Day back in 1884. Because the elm tree came from the provincially owned land, of course, around the legislative building, rather than city property, Urban Lumber was not immediately notified about the tree removal. But by accident, Mike McGarry happened to be passing by when the tree was being taken down. Of course, he recognized the opportunity and he asked the contractor, "Could I have the tree?" Well, he was told he could. So McGarry immediately arranged for a crane and a truck to get it to his workshop. He processed the tree into large slabs, and he used those pieces of wood to make an absolutely gorgeous boardroom table that now sits in a meeting room at Fort White Alive. But just as interesting as the stories of where the trees come from are the non-wood items that McGarry and his staff have found basically buried in the trees they received.
How do you get non-wooden items buried inside trees?
Well, for example, imagine someone nails a sign to a tree on a public street. You know, maybe it's for an event, or maybe it's advertising a yard sale. Well, unless somebody pulls out that nail, over the next few years, as the tree grows, it eventually engulfs that nail. Now, McGarry says they encounter lots and lots of nails in the trees they receive from city property. Indeed, some trees have to be rejected because they simply contain too many bits of debris. Now, I don't find that especially surprising, you know, because people do use trees, for, you know, for mounting all sorts of things. What I find more interesting is that some rather strange items have been found in trees too, beyond the nails and the screws. And in fact, McGarry showed me a jar full of these items when I visited his shop. There was things like a bike lock from the 1940s, a glass insulator for telephone lines, and chunks of clothesline and chain link fence. But I think strangest of all was a golf ball. McGarry's equipment sawed it in half as it cut the tree trunk into slabs. Now, I suspect then that someone probably placed that ball into a tree crotch, you know, where two large branches met, and eventually the tree ate the golf ball. And who knows how long it might have been there.
Now, how can someone see examples of these reused abandoned trees?
Well, wood from Urban Lumber is sold around Winnipeg at stores of Windsor Plywood. And it's also sold directly from the McGarry retail store on Loudon Road in Charleswood. You know, and when I was there, I saw all sorts of furniture as well. I saw tabletops, I saw shelving and bar stools, all of which were beautiful. So anyone interested in giving an abandoned elm tree a new home should check out Urban Lumber.
Well, Gordon, I was skeptical at the start. Should never have doubted you. You managed to pull that one off. Thank you for this. What's up for next week?
Archives are often called the memory of society in that they are repositories of information that help us to understand who we are and where we have been. But to extend the analogy of memory, I fear that Manitoba's archives are starting to show signs of Alzheimer's. They're becoming forgetful. Not by accident, but as a result of a troubling challenge that we'll discuss next week.
Oh, I'm already a little stressed.
Well, there's more to say, and we'll talk about it next time.
Stay tuned. He left us on a cliffhanger. Thank you, Gordon.
You're quite welcome. See you next week.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.